Welcome. My name is Asam Stolu. I'm a trainee editor of the UEG Journal, and you're listening to the UEG Journal podcast. Each episode will highlight one of the most relevant articles recently published in the journal, with the purpose of learning from the most recent evidence and to provide a platform for authors to discuss the most important findings of their research.
Hello and welcome to the UEG Journal podcast. I am Tarık Kani and I'm trainee editor of UEG Journal. Today, Dr. Kristin Akbotton from US will be with us to talk about their article. He is the corresponding author of the article entitled Therapeutic Sequencing in Inflammatory Bowel Disease, Determining the Optimal Position of Vedolizumab for Long-Term Crohn's Disease Controlling Using Real-World Evidence, which was published on June 2024 in UEG Journal. So, dear Kristin, welcome to the UEG Journal podcast again. I'm really happy to have you in here with me today. Thank you very much for joining us. I want you to first please introduce yourself and the others to us, please.
Okay, so I'll start with myself. Thank you, Tarik, for inviting me. I'm a global medical director at Takeda. I've been there for 7 years, and I've worked on the data generation in general, and more specifically in this context, I've been in charge of building a model for simulating the different position of vedolizumab. This model was built with experts in the field that are co-authors, but also physicians, because we wanted this modeling to be really relevant for physicians. So Edouard Louis, the first author, is heading the IBD clinic in Liège in Belgium, whereas Alessandro Amuzzi is leading an IBD clinic in Milano in Italy.
So what was the major idea which made you to work on this topic?
Well, I think it came actually from the ground. Some people telling us at Takeda that we have an exquisite response if we start early. And this response is still interesting, but quite decreased after anti-TNF especially. So, and we knew that if you look at the literature, most exposed patients have a lower type of response, and this is expected. But what is specific to vedolizumab is that this delta, this decrease of response, is particularly marked as compared to some other biologics, among them IL-23s, for example. So at the time of the study, only ustekinumab was available. So we included ustekinumab along with adalimumab and infliximab in the model.
In your article, you used the published data instead of creating any data. So do you think the results of your work will be better if you use a totally new real-life data, or do you think your method is enough to present the population? What are the superiorities and the limitations of your method?
Okay, so I will start with the limitations. The limitation is that, as all models, you are not able to replicate the reality completely. Okay, so you have to take all the data with a grain of salt, because the modeling, as good as it can be, cannot really replicate the reality. But coming to the first part of your question, would you be better if you were generating a prospective trial, for instance? So typically, the sequencing has to be explored in a factorial design. If you were to do a randomized clinical trial, you have to really test all the sequence possible in the most controlled way, which is a randomized clinical trial. And practically, this means a lot of patients, a lot of time to conclude this type of exercise. And you're not even sure that this is relevant, because by definition in randomized clinical trial, patients are controlled. So you are not mimicking the reality where, you know, things are not really controlled and can be dirty, and people can have all sorts of co-medication. They can be escalated. They can have all sorts of practice varying from one country to another. So you cannot really replicate the reality by using a clinical trial design. You may have something, but you never know if what you are showing is absolutely applicable. So right from the outset, we decided to use real-world evidence, and to because we wanted this data, whatever they would be, to be really a good, a representation of a reality. And you would see that in the modeling, there is an induction part and a maintenance part. And we didn't assume anything. The only thing we assumed is that most people will start their sequence with corticosteroids, okay? Something that is really important, because if you don't take this aspect, then you may have different results that are not exactly helping the physicians out there. So yeah, your question is relevant. In an ideal world, you want to do some benchmark exercise and try to find the best sequence. In reality, you're probably better off doing something simpler, but more interesting at the end of the day, because it actually helps the clinicians out there.
Thank you very much. So in your study, vedolizumab provides best results when used as a first biologic agent. On the other hand, the first biologic is always a lucky one, which implies better results when compared to second or third stage use. So do you think better results as first choice is specific for vedolizumab, or would you get similar results with other biologics or small molecules? What do you think about it?
You're absolutely right. I think all clinicians would tell you the first drug is the best, obviously. Everybody has a spectacular result in biological naive patients. That's a fact. The reality, though, is slightly different. If you were to look at, for instance, from real-world evidence, we had this fantastic study from UK called IBD BioResource, where they could compare vedolizumab according to the positioning of vedolizumab in the sequence, in first or second or third. And what is striking is that you lose a lot by not using vedolizumab, especially in CD in first line. So I think that's a general statement that apply for all drugs. The first drug in line after a conventional therapy is the one that would have, is a condition where you have the best results. But what is really specific to vedolizumab, and this is where we think that this paper helps a lot understanding that, is that the benefit of vedolizumab is absolutely major at first line, but decreased spectacularly when used in second or third line. So to the point that overall, if you were to treat a patient with this sequence starting with vedolizumab, you will have better results doing vedo plus, for instance, infliximab and ustekinumab than starting with, infliximab, and then after vedolizumab and ustekinumab. So the asymmetry, I would say, between the sequence starting with vedo-TNF is not the same as TNF-vedo. And we know for sure that TNF had a limited persistence. So it's only logical that given the good persistence and the good safety profile of vedo, you start with vedo. And vedo doesn't actually impact on anti-TNF efficacy. If you look at the evolved data, for instance, you would see that asymmetry again explained, where for some reason vedo is very sensitive to TNF, but TNF seems not to lose their ability to work after vedo. So I would say it's a win-win situation where you get the best of both drugs, and what you want is a long-term remission, obviously. So I think what the model shows you between the calculations is that the sequence for starting with vedo is ensuring a long-term, when you are responding, of course, assuming you are responding to vedolizumab, you tend to stay longer on vedo before losing response eventually, and then after you start TNF. Whereas if you start TNF, you may be responding, but immunogenicity will kick in. You'll be losing response to anti-TNF. It's just a matter of time. Then you start vedo, but vedo won't find, you would benefit from the vedo as long, because or your chance to be responding this time will be seriously challenged by the fact that you were exposed to TNF. So that's really something where we wanted to have a quantitative or at least semi-quantitative approach to that. And that's the reason why we have the QALYs and we have the surgical rates as well as a way to demonstrate this importance of sequence in the treatment.
So what do you think about personalized treatment for IBD? Will we use developed algorithms to choose the best care, use the precision medicine, or generate individualized drugs for each patient? It's a classical question, but I wonder what's your idea. So what's the future of IBD treatment for you?
So I think, yes, this is a dream, I don't know how many times people told me, oh yeah, Christian, if only we could have a good biomarker and that would be the end of everything, all of our problems. But no, I think most realistically, you're right, Tariq, an algorithm is probably the best we can do in terms of precision medicine or treatment personalization. I think that we have been working on probably something you heard about is what we call the clinical decision support tool, the CDST, with vedolizumab in CD with Dr. Dulai. So this might not be the best of the best in terms of statistical power, but this is, I think, a first approach to treatment personalization. So basically, it gives you based on five categories. So patient has been exposed to TNF, yes, no. Patient has an albumin and CRP level at baseline. The fact that you have surgery or you have fistula, and you have a scoring. If this score is over 19, so if you have 20 points or more, you are very likely to be responding to vedolizumab. Okay, and this exists also, to be completely fair, for ustekinumab. Dr. Dulai did the same exercise for ustekinumab. I think infliximab, and if I'm not mistaken, satralizumab, pegol, cimzia as well. So this is the first type of approach to, personalizing the treatment. But I think if you know the literature like me, and especially the last profile study that was disclosed at ECHO this year, early trumps everything, right? you especially the biomarker in that circumstances, because it was a completely failure of biomarkers, but people treated within days after the diagnosis with infliximab plus azathioprine using a top-down strategy seems to get the full benefit of this approach. So I think this is probably the lesson here, is that don't try to outsmart, to be smarter than the disease. Just try to, treat early, and whatever you do early will be most likely successful, whatever drug you use. Don't wait for the best biomarker, because for this decade, at least, I don't think we are coming close to anyone, any biomarker. Maybe it will be different with other molecules in the next decade, 2030 and more. But in the meantime, I think treat early, use whatever algorithm or tool at your disposal, the decision support tool, and I would say that that's already, going to increase the likeliness of response to the treatment. Yeah.
So Kristin, you are taking place in industry and also contributing to the scientific literature, and you're a medical director. I think it's really valuable. And what do you think about the industry and science collaboration? And where do you put the line between industry and clinical science?
Okay, so I think that what industry can bring to the equation is that we can make things happen in terms of scaling. So most of academic research is about, finding new principle, having new ideas, new concepts. But when it comes to really applying that and trying to discover if there is a better way, let's say, being for instance, a new strategy, you can mention some of the trials like REACT or to some extent head-to-head trial like we had recently, a lot of comparison trial appeared into the literature. But this ask for a lot of energy, time, and expertise in running this trial. So I think this is a good collaboration, and I really believe that the best studies are the result of a collaboration between academics and industry. I think you need to have this intelligence of working together to get to make some progress in the field of IBD, especially in IBD compared to other drugs, other therapeutic areas, because we have in terms of our knowledge a lot to fill in, and this is something that might be surprising when you come from rheumatoid arthritis or psoriasis, other indications where things are a little bit more established, I would say. In IBD, we still need to have a lot of this collaboration to make things happen, and I'm glad to be part of it. Yeah.
Very good, and really good to read these, and willing to read more in the future. So please summarize your findings first, and then in light of your findings, what will the upcoming research need to be focused on this topic for you?
Okay, so I think that what industry can bring to the equation is that we can make things happen in terms of scaling. So most of academic research is about finding new principle, having new ideas, new concepts. But when it comes to really applying that and trying to discover if there is a better way, let's say, being for instance, a new strategy, you can mention some of the trials like REACT or to some extent head-to-head trial like we had recently, a lot of comparison trial appeared into the literature. But this asks for a lot of energy, time, and expertise in running this trial. So I think this is a good collaboration, and I really believe that the best studies are the result of a collaboration between academics and industry. I think you need to have this intelligence of working together to get to make some progress in the field of IBD, especially in IBD compared to other drugs, other therapeutic areas, because we have in terms of our knowledge a lot to fill in, and this is something that might be surprising when you come from rheumatoid arthritis or psoriasis, other indications where things are a bit more established, I would say. In IBD, we still need to have a lot of this collaboration to make things happen, and I'm glad to be part of it. Yeah.
Thank you very much, Christian. I really enjoyed and learned a lot with you today. So also our listeners, thank you for your time and see you in next episode.
We hope you enjoyed this interview, and if you haven't already, please make sure to subscribe to our podcast wherever you get your episodes from. Thank you, and see you again.